Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. One of our best Wednesdays ever continues here at Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Thanks so much for being with us. We're really, really grateful that you would take the time to be with us. This hour, we're going to talk about how to argue pro-life. Our number, 888-318-7884, how to make arguments that are effective and helpful to people. 888-318-7884. Our guest is Stephanie Gray Connors, the internationally renowned pro-life speaker and founder of Love Unleashes Life. Stephanie's also the author of Start With What? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide, and Love Unleashes Life, Abortion and the Art of Communicating Truth. Stephanie, I got to make sure I'm going to say all your names today. There's more names than there used to be. Stephanie Gray Connors, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me on. I actually think this is my first time back on the show as a married woman.
Yes, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
In addition, I probably should mention, because lots of people will not know this, Stephanie also plays the ukulele.
I know. I was wondering if we were going to go down that path, and now I realize I didn't put my ukulele right next to me. Maybe on the break, I'll go get it.
All right, because we enjoyed how you serenaded us last time at the breaks. Our number is 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. And as we continue this week, as the anniversary of the Roe versus Wade decision approaches, we are doing some counter-programming, and we are talking with, and thus far, have I led you astray? I said this is what we're going to do this week, and it has been true. We are talking with some of the smartest and most well-grounded and helpful, wise women in the world as we talk about issues confronting women today in a way that maybe you probably wouldn't hear on CNN. Maybe you wouldn't ever hear it on Fox News. Maybe you wouldn't hear it anywhere else if you weren't listening to Catholic media, Christian media certainly as well. 888-318-7884. So Stephanie, If I wanted to get you right down, I mean, get to the nub of the matter, is arguing important? For a pro-life person, or is it more important that I just, you know, be a good example and that kind of thing?
I wouldn't say it's one or the other. It's both. We need to be a good example. We need to have a winsome personality that draws people in a very magnetic way. But once we draw people in, if there's no logic behind any claims we make, then the people we've drawn in are going to walk away. And so once we draw people in with that winsome disposition, then we want to be able to argue well and to be persuasive and have reasons that back up the claims we're making that are grounded in science and grounded in philosophy and grounded in, you know, human rights doctrines and the belief in human equality. And then that will be extraordinarily compelling to someone because they see, okay, this person makes sense. and they're nice about it. They're not being rude. And so when you can put those things together, then it makes for a more likely result of someone coming over to the pro-life perspective.
How often do you find when you're arguing, you know, when maybe you want to share the pro-life perspective, somebody has said something that the response is just disinterest in what you, that is, this is the, I have to kind of admit, this is the thing that I find the hardest, the dismissal of, yeah, whatever, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure. That does happen sometimes, and it is very frustrating. It makes me understand why in Revelation God says, be hot or cold, but lukewarm, and I will vomit you out of my mouth. And it is very frustrating to deal with that type of indifference or lukewarmness on an issue that really matters. As I often point out to people, if I'm wrong in my claims that abortion kills a human being, then I'm doing a great disservice to women who have a right to abortion. But if the other side is wrong, then they're doing a massive disservice to the preborn child who's being denied their right to life. So it isn't really an issue where you can have neutrality or indifference. It's either really right or really wrong. And so people who want to stay in the middle are in the most unreasonable position, if you ask me.
888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. If you'd like to talk about how to make precise pro-life arguments, you're welcome to call. If you're not a pro-life person and you'd like to challenge one of those arguments, you're welcome to call. But anybody's welcome here. I've never known Stephanie Gray Connors. I got them all in there. To be scared of anybody, and you're kind of fearless, and it's a fascinating quality. Like, you just don't seem fazed by any argument.
Well, you know, part of it certainly is prayer. Part of it is study. I have spent my life immersed in the pro-life arguments, and so I'm just very familiar with a lot of what I hear. And where there's familiarity, there's comfort and there's confidence. So those certainly play a role. But there have been times, you know, in my career where I found myself thinking, oh, shoot, what should I say? What's going to be a really quick, compelling response? And praying for divine inspiration because I didn't always have it. So I've heard it said that courage is not the absence of fear, but a will to do what's right in spite of your fears. So I wouldn't say that it's necessarily, you know, I'm always fearless, that there's nothing I'm afraid of, but that I have a sense that I have to rise above the fear, even when it's present. And when you do that, then you do often come across fearless because there's a degree of confidence.
888-318-7884, the number. Already folks on the line, and I do think this is going to be a busy hour. It usually is when Stephanie is here with us. So you're welcome to call. And there are still a few lines open, but they will get busy as we go. Stephanie, feel ready to go straight to the phones?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. Tom in Omaha, Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. I got to say, Nebraska stepping up today. Lots of calls from Nebraska. Tom, go ahead with your question for Stephanie Gray Connors.
Thanks so much. I was at a Catholic pro-life conference thing, and the speaker said, well, the one thing about abortion is that these babies all go to heaven. And I've heard other people say that, too, as though, well, abortion really is not all that terribly bad. I mean, the baby goes to heaven, so, you know, that's where we all want to go. Well, I don't believe that's church teaching, and I think I read somewhere that theologians are saying, well, it's more like the case of the angels. You have to make a conscious decision for God or against God, and that an unborn or something like that will have that opportunity. So tell me what you think.
Sure. I mean, Sai, you can weigh in on this too. I do know that, especially if you go back into older documents from various theologians, that there seems to be some degree of debate. Is there some type of limbo that aborted children go to? What I understand it to be, at least a reasonable position one can hold, is that we entrust the aborted child or any child that maybe is a newborn baby that dies or is killed. We entrust these children to God's mercy. I understand it to be that they would go to heaven. I can't imagine them not being in eternity with God. So that is the position that I would hold. There probably are other people that would hold different views, but I entrust them to the mercy of God that even if they've not been baptized, even if their parents wouldn't have had the desire for baptism because they might not have been religious and then they aborted them, didn't even think they were human, that regardless of that, they are human. And had they been given the choice, they would have chosen God. So the perspective I hold is that those children are in heaven.
However, this is not a good argument for abortion, because it's like saying, well, many of the, like if I'm a murderer, many of the people that I murder, they go to heaven. So the murder is not so bad. Well, actually, that's not really up to you. And killing is bad. Killing people, innocent people, is bad whether they go to heaven or not.
Right. And I think certainly from a perspective of, does the potential unknown about where these children go determine whether it's right or wrong to kill them? Well, no, because, you know, it's not like, for example, if you see a child drowning, but the child, you know,
just got
baptized and loves the Lord, right? You know, that we say, oh, well, let the child drown because they're going to go to heaven. And you know what? We're going to spare them potentially a life of suffering and an intense sin when they're an adult. So let them drown so they go to heaven because we know that, you know, and we would never say that, because we know regardless of the status of an individual's soul, we have a responsibility over the status of our soul. And that means we have to do that which is right and good. And ending the life of an innocent human being is the opposite of right and good. It's wrong and evil. So therefore, my responsibility is to not commit evil acts.
Tom, thanks for getting us started. We're looking for, we're accepting any question you have about making a good pro-life argument with one of the world's best at making good pro-life arguments. Stephanie Gray Connors is our guest, and you're welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We're going to take a quick break and come back to the phone lines, so go ahead and dial and we'll get you on. But before I send you, I do want you to know that in addition to the daily Lenten apologetics notes that you can get from Catholic Answers, we do have a free ebook for Lent. 20 Answers Lent is available for free right now at shop.catholic.com.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
He was a Jesuit, a cardinal, and a doctor of the Church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Robert Bellarmine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, including helping to draft two important catechisms that defended church teachings during the Protestant Revolt. Pope Clement VIII named Bellarmine a cardinal because, as the Pope put it, Bellarmine had not his equal for learning.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. This hour, we're talking about how to argue pro-life. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. If you want to find out about our guest, you can go to loveunleasheslife.com. She is the founder of Love Unleashes Life. She wrote a book called Love Unleashes Life. She wrote another book called Start With What? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide. That is Stephanie Gray Connors, our guest. 888-318-7884. Up first, this segment, Imelda in Georgia. Imelda, are you there with us?
Hi.
Hi, Imelda. Go ahead with your question for Stephanie.
Yes, so I'm defending for life, and my friend was saying that Planned Parenthood supports other benefit for women. So how would I guide her to the essential point to get her to see that pro-life is the right way to stand?
Yeah, okay, so she's saying that Planned Parenthood provides other goods for women, that you should consider those goods. That's what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. Stephanie?
Sure. So if your friend is saying that, I would say, ask her a question. I would say, well, part of what Planned Parenthood provides, would you agree that it is abortion, even if they do other things? And the moment she says yes, then I would say, okay, and what are the abortion procedures? How do they actually work? What does Planned Parenthood do when it is, you know, doing an abortion on a child, and see what she knows? And then if she says, well, I don't know anything about the procedures, then I would say, okay, well, are you open to, you know, looking at that with me? And you could go, for example, to Life Action's website, where they have a former abortionist, Dr. Anthony Levitino, who walks people through a first trimester section abortion, a first trimester medical abortion, a second trimester abortion. You could even go to this website that's not pro-life related at all, called Nucleus Medical Media. And so if you're going to have a surgery, you can type in the type of surgery you're having, and they show you what that looks like and how it's done. And so that website has information on first trimester abortions and later abortions as well. So once you take her through that, she's going to see a very tiny human being. She's going to see that the procedure involves a suction tube, which rips the body parts of that human being off, the arms, the legs, and so forth. So then I would ask her a question. How would it be good to classify Planned Parenthood as an ethical organization if part of what they do is that? And see what she says in response to the facts of the procedure in that question.
Imelda has that.
Oh, thank you so much. I think I can take her through that.
At the break, the medical services website, we'll put that on our show notes.
Yeah.
And anybody who wants to go there, you can just visit our show notes and find that website. Our guest, Stephanie Gray, we're talking about making pro-life arguments with Stephanie, 888-318-7884. And what I said was Stephanie Gray Connors. If you heard me say Stephanie Gray, what I meant was Stephanie Gray Connors. We go now to Boise, Idaho. Karen in Boise, Idaho, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM. Satellite Radio. Karen, go ahead with your question for Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie. I remember seeing you when you were here in Nampa a couple years ago.
Oh.
I was out at Planned Parenthood this morning with a few girls, and we're sidewalk counselors, and we don't have an opportunity here to get close to the door. They've got it fixed, so we're kind of out on the street, and rarely all we do is get a chance to talk to somebody driving by if they will roll down the window and talk to us. So one of our signs, because we often talk to women who are there for birth control, we have a sign that, because we had Dr. Lanfranchi out here to lead a seminar for us, and the sign says the pill contributes to cancer, to breast cancer. And this lady stopped and rolled down the window and said, shame on you for lying to women. That absolutely is not true. And, of course, today I know the things to do, and I didn't do it. I blew it. So what would you say?
Yeah, good question. Well, first of all, thank you for witnessing, because certainly it's not easy to do that. And especially, I'm assuming it's cold there in Idaho. So God bless you for your witness. In terms of when you have a sign up that someone completely rejects and says that is false, if they're willing to actually stop and engage, and that's debatable, but if they are, you want to ask a question to try to draw them into a deeper conversation. So on what basis is this false? So before you try to launch into making a backup defense for the claim that there's a connection between birth control and cancers, is to make them defend their claim that it's wrong. You could ask them, for example, well, what does contribute to breast cancer? What are the factors that influence whether a woman is at an increased risk? And if that involves, for example, high exposure to estrogen, then could that be something that leads us to go, could this be a factor in chemical birth control, where she might be getting a very high exposure to estrogen, for example? But instead of trying to defend everything you want to defend, it would be more start with questions, draw information out of her, and then gradually insert your facts and evidence. For myself, I have more information in my own mind of the link between abortion and breast cancer than I do of birth control and breast cancer. So I can't give you the specifics on what more to say, other than to ask questions to bait her in deeper into the conversation. And then with the info you have, making sure whatever claims you make, you do have info to back that up, then gradually, slowly volunteer that information and those facts.
Karen, what do you think?
Yep. Oh, she's right. I I know that I should have asked a question and I blew it. So,
well,
The fact that you are out there puts you so far ahead of the rest of us. God bless you for that work, Karen. And Stephanie, you wanted to say?
Sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, certainly it's important to recognize when we don't do as good a job as we think we could have done. So, hey, we want to realize, okay, I could do better next time. That's good because that will motivate us to be better next time. But I wouldn't beat yourself up about it and you know, completely think that everything was destroyed, because first of all, you were there, as Cy said, so you were doing much more than most people. And secondly, you at least made the declaration. She rejected the claim that you were making, but that information you brought forward to the public. So those are steps in the right direction. Can we always improve? Often, yes. And I'm glad you recognize there's room for improvement, but I wouldn't beat yourself up.
Thanks, Karen. I appreciate the call. Our guest is Stephanie Gray Connors. She's the founder of Love Unleashes Life. You can find her at loveunleasheslife.com. She's also the author of two books, Start With What? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide, and Love Unleashes Life, Abortion and the Art of Communicating Truth. We go now to Ori in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, listening on Oklahoma Catholic Radio. Ori, go ahead with your question for Stephanie.
Hi, thanks for having us on the radio. I've just got a quick question about assisted suicide.
Okay.
I didn't grow up Catholic, and so it wasn't a big deal. It's just not something that we talked about. I mean, it wasn't something I was formed in to have an opinion about. And as I've grown in my Catholic faith, it's obviously something very important as a moral issue. Now, my question is someone who's on life support and has, I guess, lack of a better term, quote unquote, no quality of life, is turning off the life support considered assisted suicide?
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ori.
Yeah, good question. So I would start by saying that when it comes to how we define someone and whether they have a quality of life, we have to realize the quality is our life. In other words, that we are valuable because we are made in God's image, that we are members of the human family, the one and only creation that Jesus died for, right? He didn't die for dogs or cats or fish, but he died for humans. We're that valuable. So even when we're sick, even when we're disabled, even when we're elderly, we don't lose our value or our quality as human beings. In terms of whether taking someone off life support is ethical or not, a more foundational starting point in answering that would be to get across the principle that it's always wrong to directly and intentionally end the life of an innocent human being. So we recognize when we're against assisted suicide that that death is a part of life. So I'm not against death. I mean, I am insofar as that God never wanted death. It was we humans through Adam and Eve's sin that brought death into the world. But so as a result of that, I have to accept that death is a part of life. But what I can't accept is killing being a part of life. So even though death is going to come knocking eventually, I may not commit homicide or I may not commit suicide. So once we acknowledge that, then the question becomes, when someone is very sick and they're needing a lot of different medical interventions, how do we determine whether they are truly at the end of their life and death is coming knocking and we can't stop it from opening the door? Or when it's possible that what interventions we do could actually keep death away and preserve their life. And so what theologians and philosophers often do is look at a particular intervention in light of a very particular patient and ask themselves, is this intervention I'm doing proportionate or disproportionate? And what that simply means is if it's proportionate, it's not excessively burdensome and there's a hope of benefit. But if it's disproportionate, then it's excessively burdensome and there isn't a hope of benefit. For example, someone could have cancer and try chemotherapy because they think, hey, there's a great likelihood this is going to kill the cancer. But they do multiple rounds of chemo. It doesn't kill the cancer. There comes a point where you say administering more chemo is disproportionate because it's excessively burdensome. It's not going to kill the cancer. So we can reasonably stop the chemo, not because we're trying to kill the person, but because we can't save them from the cancer killing the person. And so in the same way, when it comes to machines and different interventions that are done, the medical team needs to evaluate if we continue this, is this showing that there's going to be some benefit to the patient without being excessively burdensome? In some cases, you will conclude this is excessively burdensome with no hope of benefit. We can withdraw this particular medical intervention. But in other cases, based on how the body is reacting, it might be very proportionate to continue on with that medical intervention. So you determine it on a case-by-case basis, but what is always consistent across the board is we may never commit homicide or suicide. We may never end someone's life, and we're constantly trying to figure out if they are at their end or if it's still possible to save them.
Ori, a lot to process there. How did that settle in with you? What do you think?
I think it's a lot. I guess it made me think of another follow-up question. Do not resuscitate. Some patients are on do not resuscitate after, I mean, if something happens. Where is that in regards to the proportionate or disproportionate
right
actions?
I mean, okay, Ori, I'm going to let Stephanie answer. Stephanie, just before you do that, I want to tell Ori, when this conversation with Stephanie is done, please stay on the line because we have a little tiny booklet called 20 Answers End of Life Issues, and I want to send it to you so you have it there in your hands to reflect on it. And we can send books to Oklahoma. So just hang on when Stephanie's done. But what about these do not resuscitate orders, Stephanie?
Yes. Yeah, so another good question, and it's not something that we can say across the board you should always have or you should never have. It determines, it's determined by how a very particular person's body is doing. For example, in very elderly people, if you were to resuscitate, you can cause a lot of damage. You can break bones, which can lead to other problems. And it might be determined that that is too aggressive or excessive in a particular patient's situation. But in another patient's situation, it might not be that case. So as Cy said, please stay on the line to get that booklet. And the other thing is he mentioned, I've written a book on assisted suicide, and I actually address the issue of DNRs and proportionate versus disproportionate. So if you go to loveunleasheslife.com and look up the Start With What book, then that has information for you as well.
Ori, thanks so much. You didn't tell us how long you've been a Catholic, but welcome home to the Catholic Church. We're glad you are. And call anytime. We'd love to have your call. Stephanie Gray is our guest. Love Unleashes Life is her website, loveunleasheslife.com. Just reflecting on what Ori just said, we usually kind of put the pro-life issue on the beginning of life, but it's growing at the end of life, isn't it?
It is, sadly. I mean, if only we had a greater respect for life and for valuing the most vulnerable in our society, but sadly we don't. And so I think in a sense, the increasing acceptance of assisted suicide is related to the acceptance of abortion, where we've told a whole generation, if you get in the way, I'll kill you. And that's what assisted suicide is. Now that generation grew up and is saying, I'll kill you if you get in the way.
Tough points, but very cogent insight, I think. We'll take a quick break right back with more Stephanie Gray, 888-31 Truth.
Catholic Answers Live. We're here for you.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
If you spend any time on Twitter, Facebook, or mainstream media, you're probably familiar with the litany of slogans that skeptics employ to rescue you from the foolish belief that God exists. The constant onslaught seems to leave people with the idea that they have no alternative but to embrace atheism. How can a Christian respond? In One Less God Than You, John DeRosa breaks down 20 of the most common atheist challenges and shows you how to craft effective answers. Atheism is more aggressive and widespread than ever. Read One Less God Than You and prepare yourself to respond with the joyful truth that God is real. To get your copy of One Less God Than You, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live on this fantastic Wednesday of just magnificent conversations about life. It's always great when we have Stephanie Gray Connors with us from Love Unleashes Life. I do strongly suggest you visit her website, Love Unleashes Life, and find out what she does. Get her for a speaker or wherever you are. You've spoken all over the world, haven't you? You've been all over.
I have. I mean, COVID kind of put a damper on that. But
well, yeah, for everybody. Yes, that's true. Yeah, for everybody.
But yes, all over the world.
Do you find like are attitudes different as you go around the world, or is everybody now caught up because we have Netflix everywhere and we have CNN everywhere? Where it's all basically one big culture.
Yeah, it really is that.
I have.
I mean, I've been to Latin America, I've been over to Europe, and of course, North America, and I find the arguments are all the same. And often I found, especially when I was in Costa Rica speaking, a lot of the students asking me questions would speak of their professors who had studied in the United States and then returned to Costa Rica, and they were imparting all the pro-abortion ideology that they'd learned and arguments of people like Judith Jarvis Thompson and so forth. And so I was hearing the exact same stuff I hear here and then equipping them for what to say back.
So I would just like to apologize to the people of Costa Rica, all people in Costa Rica that are living there. I apologize that we sent you college professors. We could have sent you something better than that. 888-318-7884, the number. Craig in Yuma, Arizona, you are next. Go ahead with your question for Stephanie Gray Connors.
Hey, guys. Hi, good evening. Good to chat with you. Actually, while waiting, I had two comments. First, my question was related to the guy who you just spoke. But then I also wanted to comment on the lady who called in earlier about the sign.
Do you just want to take over the whole show, Craig? We could just do Craig commentary from. All right,
well,
I gotta go home.
He's got a great accent.
I know he's got a really good accent.
Is that South African?
Yeah, he's our neighbor over there in Yuma, Arizona. I say, you know what? I'm gonna go home.
It is actually South African. Good call on noticing it.
And
I'm impressed with your hosting. I think you struck a great balance. Listening to you.
Well, thank you. Now you take over. Now you're the host.
Well, the first thing was, I mean, maybe I should on the outset. I'm not pro-life, but I'm a little more in the middle. But the lady who called earlier about the sign, I think you should call out up front. The pill has never been found linked to cancer. It's prescribed to teenagers for acne, as well as the pill. And I think you guys let her off a little easy there. I mean, I understand the point you're making about understanding where people are coming from. But when something like that comes across your desk, I think you have a right. You have a responsibility to set her straight. And I'm sure you know this, Stephanie.
Stephanie, did you want to respond to that?
Can I respond before you go to the next one?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Sure. So what I would say is that although I myself am not well equipped to defend the claim that she made, I am aware of the physician, Dr. Lanfranchi, I believe is how you pronounce her name, who had come and spoken and provided that information. So if you look up information, Dr. Lanfranchi and birth control, cancer risks and links, she will have more information there. A second point I would just make to that is when it comes to things like birth control usage, I think whenever we ingest anything in our body, we want to ask ourselves, am I taking this in so that I'm correcting a pathology to make my body work as it should? Or am I taking it in to take my body as it is and ought to be working and then stop it from working in the way it should? So the reality is when a woman is going through puberty and then is in her fertile years, she has a body that's working correctly, which is why if she struggles with infertility, she's going to go to her physician and say, there's something wrong, I can't get pregnant. So her monthly ovulation, her monthly period, all of this is a sign that her body is working right. What birth control does is it involves ingesting a chemical into a healthy body and suppressing that healthy function from working the way it should. And actually what the birth control pill does is it tricks the body into thinking it's pregnant so that you don't ovulate. So like, for example, I'm pregnant right now. I'm not ovulating because there's a baby in my body, and Sai is very excited by that.
I didn't know. But, congratulations.
But I'm not ovulating anymore because I'm pregnant. And so what the birth control pill is, it mimics the situation of my body so that a woman no longer ovulates, and that total throwing off of her natural hormonal environment is naturally going to have an effect on her in various ways. So I would just say that in general terms, something to consider. But you did have a second point, so go ahead.
Yeah. Well, sure. And in general terms, I think we accept this in many cases and places with regards to ingesting a chemical. Like, for example, when you twist your ankle or something, you take an anti-inflammatory to stop the inflammation, which is disrupting the body's normal response, which is the inflammation to protect it. And we do similar things with steroids and other drugs that we give people, because we understand that there are consequences, but we have reasons and good justifications for doing it. And if we can show that they're not harmful, it can be really useful. So sure, I mean, I get your point, but that doesn't mean that it's necessarily wrong by any means. So then my second point was more related to, I feel like the pro-life arguments and discussions are so myopic that it's just around the birth. And it's not about the family. It's not about support for the woman. It's not about support for community. It's not about involvement of the father. It's just about this act of like the child being born. And I feel like we should have these conversations be more centered around, well, where does the responsibility fully lie here? What does it mean to be pro-life? It means that you are fully embracing it in all forms, which means you're going to support these people when they are having the child. You're going to provide them with childcare. You're going to make sure that.
Oh.
So we just draw it short and we say it's all about the baby and that's it.
All right, but I think we got the point. You dropped out just for a quick second there, but you get the gist of what Craig is saying.
Sure. Yeah. There was just one little pause. So what I would say in response is, yes, it is good and proper for us to make sure that we help people who are in need. And what I would suggest is, if you look up kind of the background of the pro-life movement and various pro-life groups in each state, that there is a lot of work being done by nonprofit pro-life organizations, charities that don't get government funding like Planned Parenthood does. And they are working to help women. They offer maternity homes for pregnant women. They offer parenting classes if they don't choose adoption and instead they're going to parent their child. And there's so many pregnancy centers that work with women beyond having giving birth. There's also a great order of nuns in New York and other places now called the Sisters of Life. And even in one of their convents, they allow pregnant women to live with them. And then up to a year after the child is born, and it's during that period where they work with the woman to help her get on her feet with a job, with further education. So they're not just giving her a fish, but they're teaching her to fish. So you are right to want to see that these things are happening. And the good news is, I can tell you, these things are happening. But then from a perspective of whether abortion is right or wrong, whether those things are happening or not, that's a totally separate issue. So for example, if I say rape is wrong and I'm a mean, terrible human being, that doesn't make my position on rape incorrect. It just means I might be a bad person in other areas of my life. And so when someone says abortion is wrong, if they do nothing to help a woman in crisis, it doesn't follow their position is invalid. Their position would only be invalid if they don't have solid evidence to back up the claims that they're making. But as long as science says preborn children begin their lives at sperm egg fusion, that they're human if their parents are human, that they're alive if they're growing, and science has established all of that, then it follows that if we believe in human rights and if we believe in human equality, then we ought to protect the youngest among us, the most vulnerable among us, which is preborn children, whether or not we do nice things in other parts of our lives. But yes, by the way, we should do nice things in other areas of our life.
Craig, thanks very, very much. Actually, I really enjoyed that conversation. I wish we could talk with Craig more. I have to take a quick break. And just so you know, Stephanie, Sister Maristella was on the hour before you from the Sisters of Life. And she was talking about that that pregnant women are welcome to come live in the convent with them. Thanks, Craig. Thanks, Stephanie. We'll take a quick break right back with more of your calls for Stephanie Gray Connors on how to make clear, precise pro-life arguments. More of that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
What do you do on Sundays? You go to church? No. I golf. Ever make a hole in one? No. Well, why don't you pray a little bit? Pray. Yeah, pray. Oh, why I need to pray? I could give you 50 reasons.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our number is 888-318-7884. We're talking about making precise pro-life arguments with our friend Stephanie Gray Connors. And I have to say, in our conversation with Craig that we just had a moment ago, a conversation with which I enjoyed, and I wish we could have more conversations like that, it did, however, make us just bypass important news that was made. You're expecting your first child.
Well, you know, I'm actually expecting my second child. Sadly, we lost our first baby.
Oh, I'm sorry, Stephanie.
Well, yes, it was very sad. But, you know, the beautiful thing about our faith is that we were able to baptize our baby and bury our baby and have a funeral. So, you know, that gave closure and consolation that one day we'll be reunited. But God is merciful. And like right after we lost our first little baby Lele, which that's the short for Laetificat is what we named her. And Laetificat means I gladden and I make fruitful, fertile. And right after we lost her, we got pregnant again. So
praise God.
Yes.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
How wonderful. And when's the due date? When are you expecting?
August.
In August.
So okay. I'm almost at the end of my first trimester, feeling very sick. You're getting me at a good moment. People call it morning sickness, but it's like all day sickness. It's terrible.
Well, congratulations.
So you're getting me at a good moment.
Well, you're coming up. You're in a very chipper mood for someone who is experiencing day sickness.
I just ate, which helped.
888-318-7884. Oh, August babies are great. You know, you're coming to the end of your pregnancy. It's 1,000 degrees out. Congratulations. Perfect timing. That beautiful.
Well, yeah, it's like in Florida. So that means like the whole third trimester is going to be
August
brutal.
Baby in Florida. Yes. you tell him he better take care of you. Starting at the end, from the end of May on, you get whatever you want. Eric in Wisconsin, you are up next. Go ahead, Eric, with your question.
Yeah, is the signal good? Can you hear me okay?
We can, yes.
Okay, good. So I was having this conversation with a woman I know, a fellow Catholic, and she says she is against abortion, but if we make it illegal, we'll be back to back alley procedures with coat hangers. And my response, wanted to see if you thought that was any good. I said, but, you know, assuming that's true, how can a woman choose if she doesn't know what she's doing? She needs to see the ultrasound. She needs to wait 24 hours to really think about it and understand what the procedure was. And then you could really make an informed choice. So was there a better response than that?
So I think you're moving in the right direction to want to impart that it's important for women to know about the development of their child. Where I would add some edits or tweaks is to convey that even if someone is informed, they may still make the wrong decision. So we wouldn't support them doing something evil, even though they knew everything about the evil act. We have to say, yes, we need to educate and inform you, but there's still certain actions that we should never make lawful, even if someone might choose to break the law. So what I often do when this point is raised is I will ask someone this question. I would say, are you suggesting that if someone is going to get harmed in the process of committing an action, that we should always make their action legal just because we want to prevent harm to them? And if they say, yes, that sounds reasonable, that is what I'm saying, then I would provide a different scenario that shows they don't really hold that view. And I would say, okay, well, imagine this. Imagine you're a nurse in an emergency room and a man comes in and he has swollen, broken, bruised, bloody knuckles. And so you begin bandaging his wound and treating everything. And you say to him, sir, what happened that caused this? And imagine he said to you, I was beating my wife tonight and this resulted. So then I would ask the person I'm speaking with this question. Should we legalize spousal abuse and give men like that man boxing gloves so next time they beat their wife, they don't hurt themselves? Now, the person is going to look at you like you're crazy and say, of course we shouldn't legalize that. Of course we shouldn't provide boxing gloves. And then you could say, okay, I agree with you, but here's what that proves. What that proves is there are certain behaviors that are so wrong that we do not think it's ethical to legalize those behaviors, even though someone who commits the behavior may get harmed. So in the same way, when a woman commits an abortion, what is she doing? She's committing homicide on an innocent child. So yes, if it's illegal, she might get harmed when committing homicide, although I would make the point that even when it's legal, there's a risk of harm to a woman who has an abortion. But the point is that if what brings about her harm is the infliction of homicide on another human being, then it's never ethical to legalize that because the behavior itself is fundamentally immoral. So unless the person can convince you that abortion isn't homicide, then it stands that it ought to be illegal, even if that law means some people might break it and some people might get harmed in the process.
And just because we're coming near the end and there are lots of folks on the line, Eric, I'm going to leave it there. I hope that that was helpful to you. Our guest is Stephanie Gray Connors. We're talking about making clear, precise pro-life arguments. Up next is Nono in Utah, watching on YouTube Live. Is this our old friend Nono?
Yes, it is. Hi.
Hi, Nono. Haven't heard from you for like, I don't know, a year and a half or something?
I'm so sorry. I'm going to blame it on the pandemic and say no more.
Okay, well, that's fine. But
congratulations on your pregnancy. And I know August babies are some of the prettiest ones. I'm totally not August baby myself.
Okay, Nono, clearly.
I'm biased right now.
Right. And you were Nono, you were born in Nigeria. Is that correct?
I was born in Nigeria.
So that's hot in August, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Go.
Well, yeah. So, okay. So I got into one of those debates where, you know, supposed to be a casual, friendly debate, and it wasn't. And it was an abortion one. And then at some point, the person could, you know, try to ask questions, and it was very they'd bring up a whole bunch of inconsistencies. Their argument was falling apart. And then they felt very gotcha in a way. And my fiance, so that's my surprise, you know, my own announcement.
Congratulations, Nono.
Congrats.
Thank you. So my fiance, after the argument, told me, hey, you sound a little bit emotional there. And your arguments were consistent, but, like, you sounded riled. Now, I didn't think I was riled, but then apparently that's what they came off as. And because this is something I want to go into as a public ministry, how do you overcome, you know, someone brings up something and then you're immediately dismissive, or, you know, because it is such an emotional and passionate topic, not getting worked up when you're talking about it? Because I didn't realize I was, but apparently I was. So.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Nono.
Yeah. Yeah, great question. And it's great that your fiance felt that he could tell you that. And even though you didn't recognize it, it often takes the observations of others to help us see certain parts of how we come across that aren't clear to us. So a few things I would suggest. First of all, as often as we can remember to keep inserting prayers in the silence of our hearts in our conversation, to ask God to give us the right disposition, that's going to help. So to say things like, come Holy Spirit, Lord, that I may see how to best love this person, how to best listen to this person, just short little prayers as you're waiting for them to finish a point that they're making. The second thing is to not take things personally. So yes, there's an understandable righteous anger we ought to have about abortion, because it is ending the life of an innocent child who cannot defend his or herself. So we ought to have, there's a righteous anger. We want to remember at the end of the day, we want to protect those children, and to protect those children, we need to convince other people to protect those children. And we're more likely to convince other people when we are gentle and when we are kind in our interactions with them. So we want to get to that goal, which then means we have to restrain ourselves at times and kind of pull back from exposing that righteous anger that we have. The third thing I would suggest is to draw out of them what is behind the claims they're making. So not just deal with them on an intellectual level, but try to deal with them on an emotional level, not from your perspective where you're getting emotional and angry, but rather from their perspective, to ask a question like, I'm curious, where does your passion come from? Or to ask a question like, how old were you when you first learned about abortion? And what did you think then? And okay, now I understand what you think now. So it sounds like your position changed. When did it change? And why did it change? And those types of questions are helpful, because what it can draw out is potentially a personal experience that person has, which is making them make irrational claims. Even if they seem level-headed and you seem more impassioned, they still may be illogical in the claims they're making. And that could be grounded in the fact that they drove a friend to a clinic, or their mom had an abortion, or they themselves had an abortion. And we're not going to find that out by directly asking, but if we ask where their passion came from, or if they know anyone who had an abortion, that could cause them to share, which could then cause us to develop empathy for them, not changing our position, but changing our disposition because of what we've learned.
Okay, Nono.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate the second part, because I think part of what got to me was that this person does have a child who has physical disabilities and was approached by multiple doctors to abort her, and they chose life. So to me, hearing them defend that abortion still needed to be legal was what got to me. But thank you. Thank you so much for everything. I'm very excited. I'm so happy to talk to you guys.
It's great to hear from you again, Nono. Did you ever get the book?
Well, you guys did send one to me here in the U.S., but not the one from Nigeria.
No. There is a Catholic Answers book somewhere in Africa looking for you. No, it's been years ago, Stephanie. I think probably 3 years ago, we sent Nono a book, and it when she was living in Nigeria, and it never came, and it still has not come. Her family's never seen it. We don't know where that book is. Nono, thanks. It's really great to hear from you. Congratulations on the engagement. Let's go to Jonathan in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, watching on YouTube Live. Jonathan, you're on with Stephanie Gray. You got to be kind of quick, because we are coming up near the end.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, this is a really fast question. I just wanted to ask if Mrs. Connors could direct me to any resource, because I've been getting into a lot of dialogue with people on abortion, and I feel I can't, like, really answer them adequately. So I was just wondering if you could
Jonathan, I'm going to just let Stephanie answer. Any resources, any ways you can learn to make pro-life arguments?
Yeah, so certainly by going to my website, loveunleasheslife.com, clicking on the blog and looking for any article tagged with abortion, there's going to be information there. From my website, you can also see a talk I gave at Google headquarters, which is proclaiming the pro-life message to a non-religious audience coming from a human rights perspective. And so that's about a 45-minute talk that really encapsulates everything that you could say to make the pro-life perspective. There's also great resources on groups like Live Action, Created Equal, Justice for All. These are other groups that you can Google. But certainly by starting with loveunleashslife.com, and if you have any questions, you can email us and we can send you more resources.
All right, so those will be listed on our show page, what Stephanie just said. Nick was typing really quickly. But also, I want to send you a book, Jonathan. We have a book that our own Trent Horn produced. It's called Persuasive Pro-Life. I just want to send that to you because we're allowed to send our own books out. I can't send you other people's books. But do check out Love Unleashes Life and check out all those others. And you're also welcome to call back anytime. Stephanie Gray, Love Unleashes Life is her website. She is the author of a couple of books. And one, start with what? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide. Unfortunately, it seems to me, Stephanie, we're taking action all over the world on assisted suicide, but we're not thinking about it. Where there seems to be this, I don't know how these things happen. It's like it just creeps up, and all of a sudden, another country legalizing assisted suicide when it doesn't seem that they really considered it.
Right, right. And like abortion, assisted suicide is an issue where people are very much making an emotional reaction. And they're thinking, well, my grandma once really suffered, or if I was ever in that situation, I would really suffer. And there's no denying that when we suffer, that can influence how we view things. And so that's why it's so important we help people think and process more deeply on this issue so we get a right-ordered perspective on suffering. And one of the points that I make in my book really briefly, because I know we're at the end, but as I draw on the insights of Dr. Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning. He was a Holocaust survivor. He knew suffering directly. He knew suffering also as a psychiatrist with patients who went through a lot of suffering. And he said, despair is suffering without meaning. And so his point was, all of us will suffer if we're human beings, because suffering is part of the human experience. But we don't have to despair. And suicide or assisted suicide are examples of despair. And so the way to avoid despair in light of suffering is to find meaning. Can I find some good that can come out of this terrible evil or injustice that I'm facing? And so what we really need to do is help people find meaning. And so I think you and I have an opportunity next month to discuss this in more detail. So I look forward to that.
I look forward to it too. I'm glad you said that. Folks should look out for Stephanie to come back and be on with us again. Please visit her website, Love Unleashes Life. Stephanie Gray Connors, thank you so much. Really appreciate all you do.
Thank you so much. God bless.
Well, I promised it was going to be one of our best Wednesday shows, and it was one of our best Wednesday shows, so I keep my promises. I do want to let you know, because I forgot to do this before, we have some School of Apologetics courses on sale right now. You can go to Catholic Answers School of Apologetics, or just go to schoolofapologetics.com, schoolofapologetics.com. We'll see you again tomorrow right here, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.